Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to our show. Today, I'm so excited to introduce my guest, Diane Hansen, who's a local gardener here in Montana, right near me. And Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I grew up in California, and I got to Montana just as soon as I could. I'm very happy to be here. Gardening is a lot different, though, here in cold weather. So,
okay.
And we do have deer fences, too.
Yes, definitely got to have a deer fence if you're going to grow anything in Montana. Even in the cities, the deer down in Whitefish, just we see them every night, and they do the funniest things. But you got to have a deer fence everywhere. So,
yeah.
Diane, what I like to ask everybody is just to break the ice, kind of tell us about your very first gardening experience. You know, were you a kid? Were you an adult? What'd you grow? Who were you with? How big was it? Just something about your very first gardening experience.
Okay. My father was grew up in the Depression time and on a dairy farm. And he and his father and brother and uncles were living together, no women. But anyway, they did very serious gardening, and he taught me everything that I know. He used manure, and he used a shovel, and that's how we did our gardening. We dug up the soil every spring, and we actually had three gardens, spring and summer and fall. So we could grow a long, long time there in the central part of California.
Okay. And then the next question I like to ask everybody is, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
It just means using manure and leaves that are all crunched up to amend my soil every year and make sure I have plenty of good worms.
Oh, good. And then, like, who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques? Was it your dad or somewhere else? Or?
Yeah, it was my dad. And I had a lot of old people involved in my life as a child, and I watched them in their yards and gardens. They loved the flowers. They crowded their plants right together. They had good nutritious soil, lots of worms, and everything grew well, and it was very happy.
So how did you learn how to garden organically then? Just from watching everybody, or do you want to share a little bit more at all?
Yeah, by watching the old people. I would go visit my friends, which were old people, and follow them through their gardening chores, and they would let me get my hands in there and pull up weeds with them and see worms and all that. So I had jobs weeding for my mom and dad, but I actually, the best part was just joining in with the gardening with my parents and the old people too.
I like that. And, you know, that's part of why I started this show, was just to share the knowledge that different gardeners have had. And just, you know, by talking to people who garden in their own backyards, just, you know, hopefully by the time we get to episode 300 or 500, we'll have, you know, gardeners from everywhere around here. So, and everybody, you know, all gardens do have some similarities. So it's, you know, even people in Florida and Arizona have tips that we can share up here in Montana. And I'm sure our information works for them. So. It's been going really good. So tell us about your garden this year. Tell us about something that grew well this past season, last summer.
Well, several things really did well. I moved several items from the outside perimeter of the garden that was kind of shaded right into the middle where they would get full sun. And that would be my basil and my tomatoes. And I just kind of let them go. I watered them really well. And of course they had good soil. And so they kind of just went wild and good and strong and tall and, very tasty.
Oh, I like that. And that's good companion planting. Basil and tomatoes go good together, and they taste good together.
Mm-hmm.
How about something you want to try or do different next year, something you're excited about for next season?
Well, for one thing, I want my husband to stop digging up the soil and replacing it every year. He just loves to sift. I think he's an earth mover at heart, and he just loves to move it around and mix it up again and all that. But what I would like to do is just add manure and leaves on the top, and definitely I do not use a rototiller to kill all my worms. So I just want to add richness to the soil every year. That's all. No more sifting.
I like that. I never thought about that a rototiller would kill off the worms. I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, in New Zealand, the natives there, they plant in terraces along the hillsides, mm-hmm. the sweet potatoes, basically, and they do not dig it up. They just cut a slit and put their seed potato in there year after year after year, and it grows so well.
You know, my guest that I had on, well, his interview posted this morning from Australia, John Moore, who runs the World Organic News, that was his advice was don't dig, and he talks about just adding... you know, it's kind of like you're talking about straw and compost to the earth and just constantly rebuilding the soil and not digging it up. So
yeah.
If you haven't heard that episode, you should check that out. It's number 17.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So tell us about something that didn't work so well this season, something you had a little trouble with or didn't come out the way you thought it would.
I have had trouble year by year with sweet peas. I grew up in California where we had fragrant sweet peas, and they're colorful, and I really want them again. So every year I try here in Montana. But I haven't put them in the sun properly. So I'm going to make sure and put them out in the middle of the garden instead of under my hoop that I have for winter squash.
Now, sweet peas, I think, do they need to go in the ground early? Is that part of it? Aren't they kind of a cooler weather crop, too? I know regular peas that sugar
true,
snaps.
But, yeah, but... I just haven't got the knack of it right yet, and they haven't sprouted early enough, and by the time they get around to blossoming sparsely, then it's the end of the season.
And yeah, and then I guess I was also thinking that they might not be such a good frost. They might not take a frost. Well, I don't really know. I'm trying to think, do we have sweet peas even? The flowers. But oh, don't those smell so good when you pick a little bouquet of sweet peas? That's one of my favorite scents.
And they last a long time in a little vase.
Yeah. All right. Something that you find is easy to grow and is generally successful every time.
My most impressive thing is a hoop that I leave up year after year after year made of pig wire. It's very sturdy. It looks like a greenhouse made of wire. But I plant my winter squash along the edges of it, and the winter squash grow up and over. The greenery's on top, and the squash grows down through the hoop and dangles down below. It's a great little playhouse for kids.
Uh-oh.
And it's very impressive to all the neighbors.
Fun. I'll bet that's way fun. I love things like that where you can like look down under the, I'm always taking pictures underneath the squash and the pumpkins and thinking, oh, this is going to make such a good book someday to paint.
Yeah, it keeps the winter squash all in one spot instead of traveling and taking up my space.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Makes a cozy little room under there, and I can plant things that do well in the shade underneath.
Ooh, you know, I'm hearing several guests talk about that, that planting things next to each other that grow tall to make shade for things that don't and extending their season a little bit that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, we're all sharing, no matter where we are. Okay, how about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in our climate?
Corn.
Yep.
And I just haven't had good success with corn. I could get the short kind, I suppose, but I'm just tired of experimenting and I have limited space, so I'm going to do without corn.
Corn's tough, and I've heard a lot of people say that. And we had such a good corn crop going this year, and then we got that early frost, and it was so sad because we were, it was really coming, and there was nothing
to do. Well, I am spoiled about corn. I used to live in Alabama where it was real hot, and we dug up some virgin soil. We put on a lot of horse manure, and would you believe we got 8 to 10 foot tall corn stalks with 4 large ears on each stalk.
Mm-mm. Wow.
Oh, it was amazing. 4 full-size, very fat ears.
My story with corn that I always remember was I was really sick one fall, and so sick, and Mike picked some corn and made me fresh corn, and the broth from the corn was like chicken soup, and it just, I came right back to health right after eating that. It was just so cool, that the corn.
So, I'll try that with my farmer's market corn that I buy.
Homemade corn can't be beat. All right, or you could probably use regular corn from the farmer's market or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I added some new questions. I don't know if you saw these, but I think I sent them to you. Which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden, but you do it anyway?
Let's see. Well, I like to water by hand, but I do not like to set up hoses for watering automatically. If we just don't have time, I don't like to set up the pedestal and put the sprinkler on and adjust it just right. No, no.
Nice. So just watering by hand. That's good.
Yeah,
and you know what people don't realize a lot about watering by hand is that you'll get less weeds that way, way less weeds. Because we have such a shortage of water at my house, we can't really, you know, set a sprinkler up. You have to just watch every drop, and so you're aiming for the just the base of the plants, and
right, the base.
A lot less weeds that way.
Yeah, I didn't even realize.
Yeah. How about your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I like to walk through it, and I often talk out loud to myself. I talk out loud to the Lord. I talk to my plants. I just like to use it as a place, mm-hmm. a friendly place and a happy place to go.
Oh, I like that. How about your favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
It would most definitely be a shovel, because I can use a shovel to dig deeply or I can use it to dig shallowly. I can use it with detail work, or I can really, really move some earth.
Nice. How about, so this is always my big challenge, eating or harvesting your vegetables or your fruit on time?
Oh, I just don't have a trouble with that, because Dave and I, we're two people here. I do not wait for all my produce to be ready and harvested all at once, because that's too much work. I eat it bit by bit by bit, starting when they're too small to eat. I put them in my salads. And then as they grow during the season, I just keep eating them bit by bit. And then I do let them get a little overdone, but I keep them in the soil. And my root vegetables, my salad vegetables, everything, I just eat it bit by bit by bit. And that way I'm not overwhelmed with work.
I like that. Okay, how about secrets for, like, preserving food or making it last? Do you do, like, any canning or freezing or any of that kind of thing?
When I was a younger person, I used to do a lot of canning, but then I found out that the nutrition was null and void that way. So I dehydrate at a very low temperature, 105 or so, and then I have these things that I can powder up in the wintertime and use for soups or powders or, you know, spicy sprinkles.
Ooh, I like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there like a favorite food that you like to preserve or dehydrate the most that you think works the best or that adds the most spice to soups?
Well, beets are very nutritious, and I do like to add that. I mean, dehydrate that.
That's interesting. Dehydrating beets.
Mm. Yeah, beets. But I do my greens too, dehydrating.
Really? Like salad or spinach or what kind of greens?
Kale and chard and anything green.
Okay. How about special techniques for cooking, like a weird or unusual food maybe somebody hasn't heard of?
Oh, well, I have lovage, but I use my lovage raw. A lot of people haven't heard of lovage. Mm-hmm. It grows tall, could be like 5 feet tall, and it tastes like celery.
Oh, really?
So I would highly recommend people grow lovage in a cold climate. Just let it go. Snip off leaves whenever you want to add it to your salad, and it's very, very good.
I'm going to have to try that.
Mm-hmm. I like to use my garden raw as much as possible. I don't preserve it, mm-hmm. except for dehydrating. We eat it fresh because it's very potent.
Very good. Okay, how about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden? Anything, I mean, and you can say a salad if you want to throw some things together in a salad, or is there something you like to make from the garden?
I do like to walk through the garden and pick up little bits and pieces for a salad, fresh. I don't store very much in the fridge, but my winter squash I use just exactly like pumpkin. I just, everything I make with it, I either call winter squash or pumpkin.
So, and like, is there a specific recipe? Like, I have a recipe, a Chilean squash recipe from the, I think it's the Broccoli Forest cookbook. That's just so good. And I use pumpkin for that a lot. Because I, for somebody who doesn't cook a lot, actually, one thing I'm always surprised is people who don't use fresh pumpkin for pumpkin pie. Because that, to me, is so easy.
I read that on your blog and saw that picture just today.
And, Yeah, it's weird because I just cut up the pumpkin and throw it in the water, and then the skin peels right off, and you just have fresh pumpkin right there. And I always get a perfect pumpkin pie from that, almost mm-hmm. always anyway. My crust, and the crust I also get from the Broccoli Forest cookbook is it seems to work really well for me. But the chili and squash is so good. So what do you like to cook from your squash or your pumpkin?
Well, as for me, I like to use everything raw as much as possible. And so my winter squash, I put on my spiraler. You know what a spiraler is?
Mm-mm.
It cuts anything you put on it into long noodles.
Can you eat the squash raw?
Yeah.
Really?
Raw spaghetti out of it. You can put anything you want over raw noodles. It's very, very delicious. You can parboil them if you especially want them to be warm or softer, uh-huh. but they're perfectly good raw.
All right. I'm going to have to try that. Mm-hmm. How about a favorite internet resource?
Well, I just use Google search. I can find anything just by Google search.
Yep.
But no, wait, I did write this one down. Okay. Offgridmontana.com. This is a person that has moved to our area from New York, and he's even written a book. But he has live webcams. I think he has three of them on his property over by the Tobacco River. Uh-huh. He's caught mountain lions on the camera, bears, all kinds of things, foxes, you name it, day and night.
Cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, offgridmontana.com. His name is Rich Sheehan. Maybe you'd like to interview him sometime because he and Karen really, really, really are serious gardeners.
Okay.
And they even cook their things in the outdoor fire in Dutch ovens.
Ooh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I cook a lot of things on my wood stove, but I don't cook much outside.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or a blog or anything that you like?
Well, I think offgridmontana.com. It's a blog, and he also has a book. I would say that.
Okay. How about, so now here, you have a business, or you, because you were going to talk about essential oils, right?
Yes, I thrive on home businesses, and my mainstay is Yum Living Essential Oils, which are special therapeutic grade. And the FDA doesn't allow us to speak about medicine, healing, and such as that, and viruses especially these days. But you might be able to get the idea by those things I've mentioned that the essential oils are very useful in keeping us healthy.
So and we do you have like a website, or can people go somewhere to get this information, or how could they connect with you? Or
I'm on Facebook, and that is Diane Hansen, D-I-A-N-N-E, Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. My town is Fort Wayne, Montana, so you can find me on Facebook. But the corporate website that I use is youngliving.com.
Okay.
It's a website. It's a business that we invite people to. So my member number is 605-520.
Okay.
And we enroll with the website in order to purchase our essential oils. So this past year, I bought some Melissa and other things that I need. Helichrysums is straw flowers. Melissa is lemon balm. I bought several herbs and things that I knew we had oils from just to experience the plants. And I use helichrysum against neuropathy, nerve damage. I use Melissa. These are oils. I use Melissa oil against flu and such viruses as that. It's great to have these plants in my garden.
So Melissa is lemon balm, and what was the other one?
Helichrysum is straw flowers.
Okay. And you just grow that right in your garden?
I do, yeah. And they really flourish. They come back year after year, too.
And then do you like mix them in with an oil, like olive oil or something, and make like a...
Oh, no, I can't make essential oils from my own plants because there's quite a science to it. And to get all the chemical constituents distilled, Young Living goes to quite a process. So I just my oils. But I was interested to get these plants and experience them in my salads and smelling them for bouquets and such.
Cool. Okay. So then my final question that I've added here is, if there's one change that you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, like, is there a charity or an organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the earth, either your local area or on a national or a global scale?
It has to do with pollinators. Okay. I think people pay special attention to cultivating their pollinators, make a good environment for their pollinators, and speak out against chemicals that kill pollinators, and don't use these terrible chemicals either.
Very nice. Okay, how about an inspirational tip or a quote to help motivate our listeners to reach into that dirt and start their own garden?
Well, in my opinion, you feel closest to God in the garden, and that gives you peace and grounding deep inside. So I recommend that they make a little plot or a big plot and go into that garden and get down and get close.
Thanks. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today, Diane, and working with my crazy schedule and just being patient with my computer technology. I really appreciate it and all your patience. And sharing such great tips with our audience today. I think they're really going to learn a lot. And I guess basically that's it. Do you just want to say goodbye?
Well, thanks, Jackie. I appreciate talking to you, too.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I would like to encourage you to visit our website at mikesgreengarden.wordpress.com/organicgardenerpodcast, where you can check out the links to everything we talked about today in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.